Okay, I think we're going to get started. It's that time. Thank you. I will warn you guys sitting in the middle, this monitor out front right here seems to clip the slides more than the side monitors. So if you guys want to move so you can see one of the other monitors, I won't be offended if no one sits right up front here. I can handle that. It's more important for you to see the screen. Just to get a feel for the folks in the room, we thought we'd just get a little bit of information. So are there, of the people in the room, how many people work for a service provider or a hosting company? Oh, that's good. That's great. Okay. So one of my jokes, I'm Eric Winner. I'm a program manager in System Center. I'll be presenting with Mark, and we're going to switch off. I'll switch off about a half hour in. We both work on System Center. My main focus in System Center is Virtual Machine Manager. So I'm going to cover some of the core changes we're making in the Virtual Machine Manager 2012 Service Pack 1 release. So not the 2012 release on the market, but the new service pack, and how we're making some changes to facilitate the service provider market. One of the things I always say internally is the System Center 2012 SP1, the SP is not for service pack, it's really for service providers, because that is one of the main focuses we're taking with this is focusing on those types of customers and partners and enabling that market for System Center and Windows Server. All right. How many people are familiar with System Center 2012? You guys all familiar with it? Okay. Then I won't belabor some of these slides, and we can get in and do a demo, and if we have time for discussion afterwards, that'll be great. So this is a slide that we use to just describe the main underpinnings of System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager. The main concepts we're going to talk about here today is the upper right, the cloud concept is really where we're going to start, and including the delegation and the changes in delegation we're making in the service pack release to enable the hosters. One of our main themes, in fact, for the Service Pack 1 is we envisioned what are we going to do? Unlike the main 2012 release where we kind of did these vertical features, the focus and the themes for System Center Service Pack 1 really were these horizontal features. So how can we increase perf and scale across the board? And one of the reasons for that is hosters tend to have more VMs running than any single enterprise. So we know that the hosting, the scale will have big impact on the service providers. Also looking at leveraging the Windows Server platform. A lot of these features probably really aren't directly relevant, except we do intend to leverage the network virtualization to enable hosters to deliver isolated networks to, say, different organizations, different companies. So I think that is a big area of investment that service providers will leverage. Partners, probably not a whole lot here. I don't think that's relevant in terms of hardware partners or service templates or UI add-ins. Service templates may be the one area where it enables a hosting provider, in working with you, we can build a SharePoint template. We can build an Exchange template. We can then automate the deployment of those common applications. You can wrap that in a service template and then have those as an offer to your customers to quickly deploy sort of pre-built applications. And then I'm going to talk most of today on our multi-tenancy model, a new concept called the tenant administrator, and I'm going to show you how that works. We also have a way of allowing you to build. The whole talk really is about how we have a REST Data API and how we're making some fundamental changes in Virtual Machine Manager to enable that. In this classic sort of four-step scenario, again, we're going to focus mostly on the third bubble down, which is what our delegation model is. This is our cloud construct. I'll go pretty quickly. If you know 2012, or of those of you using VMM 2012, are you pretty familiar or using clouds? Yeah? Are you familiar with that abstraction? Okay. So the main intent around our building the private cloud was to abstract away the details of the fabric and let you just delegate capacity without someone needing to know. So the main abstractions we deliver here that I'm going to talk about are really the capacity and the capability are the two sort of new concepts we have. I think most people get the capacity aggregation, but the capability profile concept lets you customize the operations someone can do on the cloud. Covered this slide in a couple presentations, I think, and it just is here mostly for reference. We'll jump into the demo and show you, but as you build these clouds, you can expose a cloud to your customer if they've contracted with you that they need room, they need so much memory or so much storage. You can actually publish a cloud to them that makes it look like you have as much that much hardware, even though you may just be in the process of still provisioning the hardware. So you can overcommit your resources and be provisioning those behind it on demand. And then there's these dimensions of controlling the capacity of the cloud. So you can set how many virtual CPUs or how much memory or how much storage the cloud will hold, which, again, can be more or less or equal to what's underlying it in physical capacity. And then the other sort of capacity and capabilities. So capacity capabilities is around what kind of actions will you allow on the cloud, and what shape, what VM shapes will you allow. And so this template was modeled at the time where we came up with some of these concepts. We were looking at Windows Azure. We were looking at some of the other, you know, big public clouds where they had the notion of a small, a medium, and a large VM. And by creating your own capability profiles, you can designate what you consider a small, medium, large VM. You can do that. Or you can just have one capability profile that's got a wide range of settings, from 1 to 8 CPUs, from a small amount to a large amount of memory. So it's up to you. You can have one or more capability profiles to control the discrete shapes of your VMs. And then we ship a built-in set. It often gets talked about, like if you click the Hyper-V, then that cloud can only run Hyper-V VMs, and that's not exactly true. The Hyper-V capability profile reflects the full feature set of Hyper-V. So it really just says Hyper-V can have from 1 to 32 virtual procs in a VM. So you could still have a VMware backing, and if it can meet all the capability checks, you could still put a VMware VM on that cloud. It's really around constraining the shape of the VM. It's not around the hypervisor flavor. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about, so once you've built those clouds, and I'll go through some of that quickly in the demo as well, but I'm just going to do a bunch of slides and then get into a demo. The new user role that we've introduced in the service pack release here is the TO1, third one down, the tenant administrator. And in talking with a lot of hosting providers as well as customers of them, it became apparent that we needed to do something to unlock the ability for a hoster to sell a set of resources to a customer and then let that customer decide who it was that could consume them and how much, and sort of sub-delegate the policy downstream. So this tenant administrator, it's cloud only. So again, they can't see fabric information. They can't see your host. They can't see your storage. They can actually, it's not in this release, but eventually in the beta release of the service of the 2012 service pack for System Center, the tenants will be able to author their own virtual networks. So they'd be able to bring their own IP. They can then subdelegate and assign the cloud. I'll show you how that's done. And then their actions are configurable like the self-service user actions are configurable. So you could decide that for this tenant, you're not going to allow them to checkpoint VMs. And then that tenant can decide to subdelegate, but since they can't checkpoint, neither can any of their subdelegates. So that constraint flows down the chain there. There's quota settings on the tenant, and they can set further restrictions on their self-service users, on their app admins, and I'll show you how that works. And now this is a view of just a quick summary of where we are in System Center 2012 VMM. Down the left-hand side, you can see the notion of the fabric admin versus the application admin and what parts of the infrastructure they can see. So you can see all the sort of orange-colored blocks at the bottom are all fabric data that we hide from the app admins. And then you can see at the top, we really want the app admin focused on the templates, the VMs, the services. There's a quota restriction, and there's sort of these abstractions in the cloud around library paths and capacity and logical networks that we allow them to see so that they can specify their requests. As we move into the SP1 release, we're adding this new intermediary user role here called the tenant admin. And you can see that the tenant admin can do everything that app admin can do, except there's two extra features that we're giving to the tenant admin. One is the ability to create the app admins, and the second is the ability to author or create the virtual machine networks. And then you can see the virtual machine network in purple there drops in as a new capability that's available to the application admins to connect their VMs to those VM networks. So this is just a good summary slide, again, more of a takeaway when you're trying to figure out what are the main objects that are authorized for self-service. What do we mean by that? What can they do? You can see jobs down the right-hand side. I'm going to talk a little bit about jobs today, too. Everyone that can run an action, we have a full audit trail. You can see who ran the action. And so that sort of spans the spectrum of user roles down the right-hand side there as well. We will touch on that today. We talked a little bit about this. I'll leave this here for reference, and I'll go through this in the UI. But there's actions, quota, the dimensions of quota map the dimensions of cloud, so you can set those all the way up and down the chain. And then your self-service users can share amongst themselves. This was a big request from 2008 R2, and we enabled it in 2012. There's not really any changes here in the service pack, but it is possible for two self-service users in the same self-service user role to do peer-to-peer sharing. One of them can create a template, and he can share it with another user, and then they can cooperate on authoring templates, and they can co-manage VMs, and there's a sharing ability for them to share without contacting the full admin. So this is a new feature for SP1. I want to explain a little bit how this works, and I'm going to show you. So when we started working with Mark's team, and we started to try to put a web API on top of a RESTO data API on top of Virtual Machine Manager, one of the problems we had was if for every web request you needed to authenticate against the back end and open a PowerShell connection and get going, right? Like you're going to time out the web connection before you ever get to the server and get the data you wanted. So we came up with this idea of a way to proxy the identity of the person doing the web request against the back end Virtual Machine Manager. And we call that on behalf of. So the essence of it is you can connect to the Virtual Machine Manager as a full admin, and then through the use of PowerShell flags, you can tell the engine that you're the full admin who can change anything, and now you want to operate under a restricted set of permissions, and you're operating on behalf of a certain tenant or on behalf of a specific user. So it's taking those full admin privileges and narrowing them down. So in this way, you can connect to the VMM server, we cache almost all the objects on the client side. We go to the server for authorization, and then we can return very quickly different users' requests, and Mark's going to go through that through the web interface. So this enables a lot of a big performance that we needed to deliver this feature. I'll show you in PowerShell how to open the connection, how the object filtering works. Because you're passing these flags of on behalf of, we can enforce the quotas, and we can enforce the ACL and security checks on the objects, and we can enforce what you're allowed to do in that sort of diminished role. And then in the audit trail, we're introducing a new tag on all the jobs, which is a session owner flag. So now we can show you, and I'll show you this in the UI as well, it'll be very apparent that the full admin ran the job on behalf of Joe. So we now will track both those dimensions on the job trail so that the self-service user can also tell what actions are happening against his objects, whether he takes them directly or it goes through this sort of proxy channel. All those jobs still show up in the audit trail for every object, and we capture both pieces of data for auditing. Okay, this is an example of the PowerShell syntax. You have to open the connection with this trailing bold flag called for on behalf of. So you're basically opening the connection in proxy mode. And when you do that, no matter what you do in this connection, you never get fabric info. So even though you're the full admin, you're essentially saying, I'm going to open this connection to do proxying. We strip out all the fabric info, even for the full admin on this connection. And then you need to load up a user role object. And you can then, in the third line down, you'll see that I'm getting the blue VM from the blue self-service user, SSU self-service user. And I'm on behalf of user one, at Blue Cola, and then I can take an action like stopping his VM. One thing to note also here is this feature is also where we leverage and we introduce bring your own identity. So since you're connected to Virtual Machine Manager as the full admin, and you're telling us you're doing these actions on behalf of a role and on behalf of a user, we don't need to authenticate that user. So as the layer above connects to us, and Mark will talk about this, the authentication happens outside Virtual Machine Manager, and we're really just accepting this user identity now is really just a string, and it's just string used for tracking within our system. So you can use Facebook identities, you can use Windows Live IDs, you can create your own domain, and you can still use your domain if you want. You can have a domain that you host that all your customers have an account in, or you can let them use their domain IDs, and you can set up cross-domain trusts so that they can use their corp ID. Whatever you want to do, it's sort of now up to, it's outside the VMM system here, is another big change we made. Okay, so let's jump in and do the demo. Okay, a couple things I want to just highlight here in the console. Here's the SP1 console. I'm connected as a full administrator. And there's a couple changes that you'll notice right away here. One is we have this whole tenants node in the navigation tree. So we've brought forward into the VM and services space the notion of who's using the clouds themselves. The virtual machine networks that you use to build virtual machines are now going to show up in this space. And then also storage. And I'll show you one of the reasons we brought storage. One was it felt weird to have your compute, which is sort of your VMs and stuff, and your network, but not your storage. So I'll show you how that works real quickly. And then since I'm logged in as the full admin, I get to see these fabric information of the hosts, but the tenant doesn't see that. So one of the nice things about this is I can now navigate the VM space by my customer. And when he creates a finance or an HR department, I can quickly see where are all those VMs, who owns those VMs. All the pivoting here works, so the overview page will be generated for finance versus HR versus Blue Cola. I can switch and look at all of Red Cola's summary information. I don't have any services in here, but that would also work to just quickly, doing customer service, I can quickly see who's, okay, which VMs are we talking about? How many do you have in play? Let me do that troubleshooting. Clouds, of course, I could always do this as well, so I can see what's in production and what's in staging. The VM networks is where you would do that self-defined networking. So either I can create these and assign them to tenants, and that's one of the other changes, is the VM networks aren't part of a cloud. They're really a tenant ACLed object directly. So you're going to create a network, and if you give it to two tenants, then their VMs can talk to each other. If you create them and just give it to one tenant, then they're on their own isolated bubble. The other key thing, if you haven't gone to our networking, is the VM network abstraction also enables you to do network isolation using VLANs or network isolation using Windows Server Virtualization. So you don't have to use the new virtualized networking in Windows Server 2012. I expect a lot of people will, but you can also use it as a transitioning. Since this abstraction is above the details, you can put this in place, and some customers you can put on a VLAN, and some customers you can put in network virtualization. It's kind of up to you. And then these storage views really just allow me to see all my virtual machine and all the storage information without having to go into the property page of each VM. So that's one of the reasons we put the storage here. Let me just quickly show you what a tenant admin would see. So here I'm logged in as the Blue Cola admin, and you can see that they just see their finance and HR department that they created. And if I want to go ahead and create another self-service user, I can go ahead and create the test group. I can supply members or not. It doesn't really matter right now. Since I have access to the staging and production clouds, those are the clouds I'm allowed to sub-delegate. Then for each cloud I delegate, I get this familiar quota settings where there's two kinds of quota on the user role. One is the aggregate quota for the whole user role. The bottom half here is per member, so the typical setting would be giving 10 VMs. You see this little warning here? I can restrict the user role to 10 VMs, and then I can tell the individual users you can use as many as you want. So you can kind of set these areas that could be confusing, but you can do it. But you get this little warning icon here that's pretty much telling you this could be confusing, but it's up to you. And then I can set this, and I can dial it back to say two each, but up to 10 total. So there's pretty good flexibility here in controlling resource usage, either at a simplistic thing like VMs. You can use these quota points. Customers use those for things like licensing costs, if they want to reflect that somehow in their templates, or just the aggregate resources. Here's where I grant templates and do sharing. I'm not really going to go into that. Here's all the actions. I can give you every action, or I can restrict just some of them. I can turn off checkpointing, but give you everything else. I can not allow you to create your own templates, but you can still deploy VMs from the templates that I provide as a service provider. Again, there's pretty good flexibility here. Run-as accounts are for just access to things like domain, join accounts, things like that, that you may want to share across customers. And that's it. In summary, it just tells me what I've configured here. I'm not going to create it. So let me show you quickly how the on behalf of works. So here's the PowerShell window. I've got this little script I wrote that we're going to cut and paste from. So these first five lines, five real lines with comments, is the first line here. I connect to the server in that on behalf of mode. I'm then just going to set up, I'm going to get the finance user role, which was under Blue Cola. And then I'm going to set just some strings here that we're going to use Pat versus Joe for this demo. So I'm connected. I've set up Pat and Joe strings. I've gotten the finance department. So now I can go ahead and get each user's VMs. And notice I'm not doing any filtering. I'm just saying, get me the virtual machines on behalf of the finance department, on behalf of Pat at Blue Cola. And the next get VM call, same connection, I'm going to get Joe's VMs just by telling the server, hey, pretend I'm Joe. What would you show me for what the VMs are? So again, there you can see that the finance web, the FinWeb VM is stopped, and the expense VM is stopped. And if you look in the console under finance, you can see that I don't want this to be Pat's VM. I know my script doesn't check for arrays, and someone threw that in there, so I don't want that in there. Let's change that. Good, so that one's out of the way now. So then I'll show you what happens. I can take action. So here I'm going to start Pat's VM for Pat. Again, each commandlet we has to take those flags that I talked about. So you're going to have, I'm starting it. So I'm starting Pat's VM. You can see now it's already running. And then I have an example in here of, well, what happens if I mess up or I try and do Pat's VM, but on behalf of Joe, right? So I'm now passing a string, and they're not the owner of the VM. You'll see you get an error. So here's where we're enforcing. The server's saying, that's not the right user for that user role. So you've misconfigured something here, and we're not going to let you do this because you passed me on behalf of Joe against Pat's VM, and the server says Joe can't access that VM. You know, that VM object's not accessible to that user. If I were to go in and share it with him, then he could, right? So again, as the users share their VMs, then this thing would work. He'd get it in get VM, and he'd get it back. So there's lots of things you can do with this. I'm going to hand this off to Mark here. Here's a script we've written that, again, gets on behalf of, and this is actually doing VM creation. So you'll just see that all the commandlets take on behalf of user role, on behalf of user, on behalf of user role. For this release, our client, our admin console, does not support this concept. We don't have this mode of using our UI this way. It was purely built in PowerShell and purely exposed in Resto data so that people could use programming against it. So we just test it in PowerShell and test it through REST. But you can't do this in the UI. You can't operate on behalf of a different user in the UI for this release. What's that? Oh, jobs. Yeah, let's show the jobs view. Talked about the audit trail. So here you can see those jobs we were running. The start VM, the session owner is me, this DC manager security account. And you can see that on behalf of Pat, I started that VM. You can see down here that this action on behalf of Joe failed, and I generated a job, so it shows up as a failure in the audit trail. And in the other, here they see those same jobs as well, started, failed. So those jobs are accessible to the self-service user, even though the full admin's running them. And again, that's just so that everyone can tell what's happening in the system. All right, so I'll turn it over to Mark now, and he can pop up the stack and tell you guys about what we're putting on top.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Eric.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm going to pop up a little bit and talk about the feedback that we received from System Center on from the service providers that we talked to over the last year and a half or so. And some of the feedback was you needed a web API to enable our portals, right, that I already have, or control panels, right? You don't have multi-tenancy. You need to add that. I want to manage with the same endpoint multiple instances of System Center. Right, networking is a painful thing. You can see that we've been addressing that with Windows Server and VMM. Okay, and the whole thing needs to be extensible. That's another thing. Okay, so what we've done is invested in a layer above System Center above VMM, I should say, that enables access via web API. So I want to present kind of a new working model that we have for hosted infrastructure as a service clouds. So down here at the bottom, I'm referring to stamps of hosts managed by a System Center management node, of which, you know, it's centered around a virtual machine manager. Okay, so say on this diagram here, there's like three different stamps, three sets of hosts with three sets of VMM servers managing them. All right, so we call those stamps. And then we're introducing a new API layer on top of that. Okay, that is RESTful, based on the OData protocol that we're submitted as a standard to OASIS from Microsoft, and it aggregates across multiple stamps. Okay. It also has the ability to extend to automation run by Orchestrator, and I'll go through pieces of that through the rest of this talk. So in this working model, we have a provider on the right-hand side and tenants on the left-hand side, and it's built to service multiple tenants. All right, so some of the capabilities that Eric had just gone through are then surfaced up through the API, and then we have kind of feature sets around managing those things. So one example would be tenants are accessing through a service provider portal, right? And they authenticate against whatever that portal provides, right? And then that portal, you know, accesses the service provider foundation with a service account, usually, or some kind of account, right? And then service provider foundation authenticates that, authorizes that, and then runs on behalf of, okay, those users, right? Another way is, and as I mentioned before, it could interact with other systems, say using Orchestrator, or by having other calls to other providers, but still having those objects at the client level, at the portal level. You can also access over the internet via, a claims-based authentication authorization. So it'll actually enable something like App Controller to access over the internet, access a hosted cloud, right? Pass a claim token in and get authorized and have access to their hosted capacity, even though they're running at an enterprise. Okay, so that's the full kind of working model. We have provider and tenants. Okay. So the feature set that's covered in the Service Provider Foundation is management of virtual machines, cloud services, which are the ones that are described in service templates, VM networks, as described by Eric previously. We're also having access to operations manager for usage, mostly. Like I said before, we're going to use Orchestrator for extensibility. To run automation against other things. And that's all sitting on top of System Center 2012 SP1 and Windows Server 2012. So why did we pick a RESTful OData API as the pattern we wanted to follow? Well, first of all, having a RESTful API allows anyone that can access or make calls, or any client application to make calls via HTTP protocol, right? It's very standard to be able to do that. So you could do that with a portal, you could do that with a mobile device, you could do that with a tablet. All those kinds of things are possible. Also, why did we pick OData? A lot of different applications, or a lot of different services and applications from Microsoft are using that protocol. I think SQL, Dynamics CRM, also Netflix also has an OData API. So there's lots of groups using it, and that therefore there's lots of developer tools. So there's existing client libraries for OData for .NET, PHP, JavaScript, Ruby, and a ton of other community client libraries. So it's very easy to kind of build in the environment you choose and access via OData. And it's evolving over time. Okay, so let's go a little more detail about the SPF architecture. So the stuff in the middle in light blue is the pieces of SPF. So below you see the management stamps, and then we have, you know, like I was describing before in the previous diagram, a host or portal client, or, you know, accessing via its own, say, Windows auth or something, and then or app controller coming in as with claims-based auth over the internet. Okay, so now, first of all, there's an API layer, the OData, right? And then we're running a PowerShell web service. I think the official title in Windows Server 2012 is the Management OData IIS Extension or something like that. But it's basically translating calls from OData into calls into PowerShell. Okay, and I'll show you what that looks like in SPF in a little while. And if you do the claims-based approach, then we have a layer that processes those, checks claims against the SPF database, right? And in that database, it has stamps, which VMM servers, then a registry of the tenants and their user role. So it'll have tenant admin user roles. It'll have self-service user roles. So when you access that, if it's a valid claim, then it'll pass it through on behalf of, right? If it doesn't, it'll say access denied. And then we have another layer that aggregates across these stamps. And then finally, those calls are made against PowerShell scripts. So we're using the built-in PowerShell surface that's already been delivered in VMM and tested, and that's what they, you know, that's their interface. And then we can also, as I said before, call into Orchestrator runbooks. Okay? So I'm going to show a demo in a little while, very soon. And in this demo, what'll happen is it'll come in through a browser first, right? And then it'll make an HTTP request with the OData protocol, right? And then it'll go against the API layer, be translated into PowerShell call via the PowerShell web service, and that'll access a set of resources that are described in a MOF file. Okay, and this MOF file is the SIM standard, you know, from the DMTF, right? So it's very simple. We'll see that in a second. And then there's a set of PowerShell scripts that it goes against. And then it uses the VMM client to run against the VMM server. Okay, so the client is on the SPF machine, right? And we have an account that is an admin on the VMM server. And then that communicates via WCF to the VMM server. And then it does the action. Okay? So now we'll switch over to the demo and see what that looks like. Okay, so before I get started on how that looks, let me just show you a little bit about where you install SPF. So in this case, SPF is installed as an IIS application, right? So it's just running an IIS. There's an Apple associated with it. And you can see down in here, there are a set of binaries that run OData and the PowerShell web service. There's a bunch of PowerShell scripts, right? And then there's a subsystem.mof file that just describes a set of classes and data types. Let me just scroll down a little bit. Here's one. So down in here, you see there's just a class, and then there's a data type with the name of the property, and that's it. So it's a very simple property description. All right. And then in the subsystem.xml, it's a mapping, right? Let me go find something else. Okay, that's fine. Okay. So it'll have, say, say update of user role. It'll actually call into this set sc user role script. It'll include these parameters that are described in this XML file, right? And then it'll pass those parameters into the script. So if you look at one of these scripts, say what we were doing, set user role. It's a little slow there. Let me pick. Okay, so just a standard PowerShell script. There's nothing special there, right? So that's it. That's what SPF is, right? It's also backed by a SQL database, and I want to show you the tables of that. Okay, now let's try to use it. Okay. So this first call will call into the SPF service and return the classes or the resources that are described in that MOF file. Right. So those are the same ones that were described in the MOF definition. Right. There. So you see VMs, user roles, whatever. Right. I can also make calls against a VMM server with a specific query against, say, in this case it'll be virtual machines, so it's running the query first. Okay? So I have, call into the service / virtual machines. I can get them only from one VMM server. That's the name of the VM server, and then I have specific properties they return. Okay? So like this. So you see I only grab 5 properties from there, but it also has relationships to a bunch of other things if you want to get the full object. Right. These are kind of hard to see in XML. So you can see here there's 3 VMs that I have in that server. But what I can do is, because this is OData, Control-C, I can also look in clients like Excel. And if I want to visualize that data, so I can use Power Pivot here. And quickly get a view of that data using a standard interface. You see that? So 3 VMs on that. Pretty straightforward to view. So I guess that's probably all I want to show right now. I'll go back to some slides, and we'll go back and do an app controller demo at the end. Does anybody have any questions about that? No? Okay, I'll just move on. Okay, so now let's talk about multi-tenancy in a little more depth, especially around the API. So here are 3 back-end stamps, right, with a bunch of clouds in each of the stamps. So like in VMM Server 1, there's the Gold Cloud and the Silver 1 Cloud. Okay. In SPF, when you go create a user role, it actually pushes the user role out to all and syncs them across whatever stamps that the tenant is configured to use. Okay, so that's why it says synced user roles down there. Okay, so say you have tenant A and tenant B, right? And as Eric mentioned, you would have a tenant user role created for each one of those tenants. Okay, so there's one for A, one for B. So say the ones for A, I can create child self-service user roles. Okay, so say for IT ops, dev and test. And each of those, say maybe IT ops has, runs production and dev runs dev and tests a bunch of different things. I'll do the same on tenant B, right? So that tenant admin had done the same sort of thing. You can configure by exposing the cloud as part of that user role, right? Access to only one of the stamps, right? So like say the production runs in the gold cloud on stamp 1. But dev is done in a, like maybe commodity hardware or something like that on stamp 2. And maybe test needs to have access to all potential environments, so you give them access to all of them. Maybe even the silver clouds, where it's like QA environment or something like that, right? So you can configure that in the SPF database. But you could also say limit a tenant to only go to one stamp. Right, so say in the case that you're a European company and you don't want to deal with the Patriot Act in the U.S. or something like that, you can have them all come to the European data center or something, right? So all of those are possibilities. And you can see now how the kind of user model that Eric was talking about is reflected in usage through the API, through the service provider foundation, Okay? So that's kind of how it works. And I'll go into a little more detail about how you would go the end-to-end experience on top of this this platform. So to set up the on-behalf of calls through SPF. So again, we just showed the tenant admin creates a self-service user role. Then that self-service user would try to access the portal. And what the portal will do is it'll actually create a claim token, or needs to create a claim token, using the SAML standard. So it's actually SAML 2.0. It's a standard identity format. The claim token gets passed, say, over the internet. With in the header, it'll have the user role and tenant ID, and the HTTP header, right? You know, and it's signed by a private key and then unlocked by the public key of the provider, right? Then the SPF will ensure that's a valid key, unpack the token, match the token data header against the data in the database, right, to see if the tenant and user role are valid. And then that'll be mapped to a VMM self-service user role. And then finally, SPF will be acting as that full admin on behalf of that user and user role, right? Just as in the command list that Eric was talking about earlier. So that's the end-to-end of how it would work in the API layer, right? And then when I show you the app controller will work that way. It'll generate these tokens and it'll access SPF over that channel. Yeah, so say this is the tenant, and say for app controller, the tenant would generate its key, private key. It'll sign it with its private key, and it'll provide a matching public key in the provider. Right, there's no external identity provider here. Actually, you know, when we were designing this thing, this is feedback that we took. Like, we considered using the Azure ACS service as a potential thing, and we got feedback from service providers that said that wasn't a good way to do it. They didn't really want to rely on that service. They wanted to own it themselves. So we said, okay, we'll back off on that. So we'll just say it will accept any claim token as long as it's in the SAML format, and it seemed to be fit better with people's needs. So it's still possible, by the way, to use ACS to do the same scenario. Okay, so now just a little bit about extensibility. So this is another pivot on the same stack that we showed before, right? So there's the interface, there's auth, and we expose this resource model with action mapping in that subsystem.xml, and then there's the actual scripts that do the task execution, right? So we were just talking about how to extend. Okay, so one easy way is that what we're going to do is provide hooks into the beginning and end of specific scripts. So especially, we think, create VM, create service, and maybe a couple of the other scripts that actions that we run are pretty, depending on who you are, you would want to create this in a specific process, right? So rather than try to figure out how to accommodate all those in our PowerShell scripts, we decided that it would be better to use Orchestrator to do that extensibility. So these extension points will be at the beginning and end of the PowerShell scripts, and then you basically can call into Orchestrator runbooks to do whatever you need to do pre and post. And the benefit of doing that is that it's pretty loosely coupled. And when we do upgrades, for example, because we'll probably have to do that, then it won't step on any customizations you've made. If you modify the PowerShell scripts, say, then that would be more impactful. So this is one way to do it. The other way is to have a completely separate folder, or maybe take a copy of what we ship and create like a VMM prime or something like that, and then modify whatever you want in there, copy and paste whatever is there, and use that as the basis. So you can create new resources there, you can provide new script mappings, you can create new logic in those scripts, you can call into runbooks if you want, call it other systems if you want. And then what you can do is, if when we upgrade the thing that we ship, then you can do a diff and just modify those things the same way you did before. That's probably the easiest way. It's possible to do other extensions, but it may be more work for you to deal with things after we change, version to version. Okay. So what I wanted to do, you might have seen this demo already. I'll go into a little bit more detail about that, but it's just the same demo that you might have seen in the keynote. It was done on Monday by Jeff Woolsey. So say a customer has already acquired this capacity and has gone through got a tenant admin provision, got a self-service user provision, then the app controller user could go and access a hosted IaaS cloud. So that's the main scenario. So let's go look at that. Okay, so you see here, I have an, oh, that's the wrong one. That's better, okay. Let me go log into App Controller here, it'll take a second. So I have an App Controller here. It's already configured to access an on-premise VMM. So it's the Fabricam VMM, and it's, you know, has certain clouds associated with it. And what I can do is add a connection via the SPF API to a hosted cloud. So I can add, you know, a name. So now I need to grab the service location for the SPF server. Grab a cert that I've already uploaded to there. Okay. Now you can see up in the clouds area, it'll have the hosted clouds as well. Okay, so I've accessed and exposed the cloud resource via that API, and it's now being surfaced up in the App Controller UI. Okay, and if I go down to services, I can see now that I have VMs from Contoso Hosting as well as from Fabricant VMM. I can go deploy. Say the QA cloud. Pick a template. Just basically do the same things you would normally do with App Controller. And pretty soon it'll be creating the demo VM. So now using App Controller and via this API, you can now access the hosted clouds as well as the on-premise clouds. And as you have already seen in the past, you can also access Azure. Okay. Does anybody have any questions about any of this stuff? Yeah, because the question is, will we handle migration scenarios where we can move VMs, VHDs, templates, whatever workloads from between clouds? In this version, we are not planning on offering that as an out-of-the-box thing. The back end supports that, and we're looking at that scenario for future. I mean, we've got a lot of feedback that that's an important scenario. So probably at an SP1 timeframe, we'll have like prescriptive guidance on how to set that up to make it work. Yeah, we have to think throughout like the moving the files and permissions and all these things, and you'll see some things coming up in the future around this for sure. Yeah, the question is, can a service provider access Orchestrator through some similar API and access Azure? And the answer is yes. There's an Orchestrator Azure integration pack. And Orchestrator has an OData API as well. And so you could just directly access that OData API, or you can hook a runbook through and use objects in SPF as well if you wanted to. So either of those options are there. So that integration pack for Orchestrator is pretty key. great. So I can switch back to PowerPoint here. I don't think I have that much more. Right, so to summarize in the set of features, right, there's VM management, service management, VM networks for self-service, VM networks for tenant admins, multi-tenancy, the ability to access system center instances across system center instances, aggregate across them. It supports the self-service tenant administration. You can bring your own ID using the enterprise identity the way that Eric was talking about. We have extensibility, right? The OData, the API surface is extensible, and you can use Orchestrator to extend to different systems. And we're also going to expose operations manager data that's relevant to VMs. Some of these features are available in the CTP2 that's coming out tomorrow. Okay, and some of them are coming in the beta timeframe, right? So all of this, all the on behalf of features will be available in the bits that you get for our beta. But VM management's there, multi-stamp is there, and I think some of the other pieces are there as well. Yeah. Right. So the question is this what's out of the box? Yeah. This full set is what we're planning to deliver at the beta timeframe.
And you said earlier that you could attach Postgres.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, can you add additional resources and calls off the API surface? That's the way I would describe it. And the answer is yes. And it's we recommend. The way that I was describing is maybe you make a copy of that folder in IIS and just make a VMM prime or two or something like that, or call it whatever you want, and then add your stuff there and change it however you want, right? And that way, when we go upgrade, then we won't step on your customizations. But it's very much supported to do that, is what I'm saying. I'll go back to the demo here so I can show you. So here in this folder, the VMM API folder, right? We have all these PowerShell scripts there. And they're just PowerShell scripts. You access them via this XML file, right, called subsystem.xml, right? And so it has a certain protocol associated with it, right? So you'd have to follow that, right? It's not very, this action, on this action, run this script, and it'll accept these parameters. That's about it. No, the orchestrator. So in the PowerShell script, there'll be a hook at the beginning and the end of these PowerShell scripts. Somewhere up in here and at the end, that will call into a runbook of your specification. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, for SPF, you can't just directly call into a runbook. We suggest that you use this thing that we're shipping, the method that we're shipping. The answer is that you can directly call into Orchestrator already using its OData API, right? The reason why you would want to go through SPF is if you want to use objects that were surfaced through SPF in the same context as those runbooks, right? But you could do some data, logic on your client application to have the data interact that way. All right, if you want to directly go against what's already surfaced in SPF, which is probably a little bit easier than you would do it this way. But both are possible. That's a great question, though. Right. Does anybody have anything else? All right, so that's the feature set. So once again, the next version of this stuff will come out at CDB2 tomorrow. We'll put out a blog post that will explain some of the information. There will be docs associated with it as well. So very much encourage you, if you're interested, to check it out. I think there will even be like a VHD of all this stuff, and you can play with that a little bit later. In the same, there will be some of the features in VMM available. So there were some other sessions. I don't know which ones are still going. I think there's a SB1 overview session that we probably would recommend you go to, which is right after this. Is that right? That Vijay Tiwari is giving, that would be a good view of the whole System Center SB1. There's some hands-on labs there. I don't think it has SBF stuff in it. There's some other resources, and there's no other, are there any other questions for me or for Eric?
Just to have a data protection manager server role in there and then have that protecting the customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this might be a good question for Eric on say how to access how would we recommend tenants access hosted VMs? And what support are we gonna have around that? That's probably the question.
You're asking how to secure the SBF?
Yeah,
their own infrastructure with firewalls, load balancing and all that. The firewall, they have to have access kind of firewall to open up the ports for the so they can RDP or they can open for HTTP or something at the web server. They have to do that by themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they can do it with the Windows firewall, but let's say they have some kind of corporate firewall thing or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's something we have to right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe Eric would be a better person there.
Yeah, so bring your own IP works on builds on top of the Windows Server 2012 network.
For connectivity, but the customer can then they can define their own IP space and you can sort of keep them in this network bubble that isolates them on the network. And then, for instance, they could extend their corporate network to a hoster. They just would need a gateway to get from the corporate network out back to, you know, they need some sort of VPN gateway or something to get from the network at the hoster back to CorpNet, but they can essentially extend their IP space. And at the hoster, you could have multiple customers using the same IP addresses. And that Windows Network Virtualization, I believe one of the talks, I think the talk on network virtualization might be during the next set of sessions, sort of between 2:30
sure,
or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a pretty there's a talk that we're giving on that, or we can get you more information if you want on that. But it basically is built on top of the core feature being delivered in Windows Server 2012.
And vSwitch features?
Those are also all the vSwitch and port profile stuff is also built on top of.
I think Vijay talked about some of that last night, right?
Right.
Yeah, so the question is about chargeback.
Yeah.
There are some features that are coming out around Service Manager actually on chargeback, and it, like an end-to-end feature where you put a cost model in and you get billing across the users of the cloud. And I think some features of that are coming in CTB2, and then a fuller set are going to come out for beta. But I actually don't know the details right now.
No.
Even though I used to be on the Service Manager team, it was really sad. I've been working all the time on this stuff. And I think it might come up in the next session if you have time to go to the SP1 overview session.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good piece of feedback. You got anything else? Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep.